It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
That was a late show last night. Ended up going to bed at 4 a.m. Back up at 8. I'll sleep when I'm dead. This is episode 741 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, January 30th, 2022. As we close the book on month one and close the book on a very lackluster Royal Rumble. It was not lackluster on the stream last night. We were popping with almost 4,000 people live at one point, so you guys brought it. I love the Royal Rumble. I've always loved the Royal Rumble. So when we have shows like the one that we had last night that disappoint in the way that it did, you guys help make it just a little more tolerable. So thank you. And I hope I can do the same for you. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so. TheSolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. I want to say hello to all of our PayPal producers. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Paul was dropping bombs on the stream last night. The WrestleMania sign was not the only thing on fire last night. So thank you, Paul. Night Stalker, Nayef Al-Safar. Big B. Brian Becerra, Out of Control, Cody Thomas, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Killshot, Keith Hart, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, I wonder if he's raging mad after that show last night, Caleb Showtime Lindley, Eric First Blood Fisher, The Pastor of Pain, Damian Ewell, Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd, and I want to give a shout out to Jessica. I know that it's been a rough week, so I'm thinking about you as well. Chris from Bethlehem, PA, wanted to give a birthday shout out to his awesome sister-in-law, Christina, who just turned 30, and his beautiful wife, Angelina, who means so much to his world. He is thankful every day that she is in his life. So that is very sweet. Unfortunately, what was not sweet was my pick in the Royal Rumble pool. I ended up with number 22, and that didn't work out too well for me. I had Nikki A.S.H. in the Women's Rumble, and I had Kevin Owens in the Men's Rumble, coming out at number 22. So, I didn't win shit last night. But congrats to all the people who did win their respective Royal Rumble pools, right? I guess that would have been number 30 for Brock in the Men's Rumble. And what did Ronda come? Ronda was number 28, I think, right? 27 or 28. So anyway, we had over 1,600 entries this year. I want to thank everybody who participated in the Facebook group. And a shout out to Zach Holker, who puts an incredible amount of work and time into these pools each and every year. I appreciate that help. And Julian Cannon as well. There were prizes that they put up. All of the information is in the Facebook group as far as listing out who gets what and who the winners are. That's where you can go to find out all of that. I am going to be hosting the live Ultimate Rumble pool. So all of the pool winners are going to go into one random pool. And we're going to pick some winners. We'll do that on the Dynamite stream on Wednesday. I haven't even had a chance to go back on Facebook so far, you know, this morning and take a look at everything. So I'm sure Zach and Julian will get me all the information I need. It's just been a very busy morning so far. But we will likely be doing that on the Dynamite stream on Wednesday night. So watch for that. And if you are a channel member on YouTube, for those who may not be aware, we did our second episode, our second installment of Better Call Solo Monster earlier this week. On Thursday night, in fact, with channel members. That's the call-in show. We did the pilot for everybody a few weeks ago. So this was officially episode two. And I had some interesting calls. And we'll be doing more of these as time goes on. A lot of good content up there. So we picked up some new channel members last night. I thank you for your support on there. On an eerie note, before we get into this Rumble stuff, I happened to mention on last week's show, it was either last week or 2 weeks ago, that Vince McMahon's mother was still alive at the age of 101. I think I mentioned it when I was talking about him during the Raw review. I mean, he looks like he's 101, but Vince still has some catching up to do if he wants to catch up to his mother. But I mentioned that, and then this week, we learned that Vince McMahon's mother passed away on January 20th, which was not this week, it was last week. This is according to an obituary that was posted online this week. It says that she passed away quietly of natural causes in her sleep. She is survived by one son, four grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. Says she was blessed with two sons, Rod and Vince. And, you know, what's sad is that her son Rod, Vince's brother, and I mentioned his death on the podcast last year, Rod passed away. He died 1 year ago to the exact day that his mother died this year. And I don't really know what kind of relationship Vince McMahon had with his mother. I know he paid for a tennis court many years ago because there was a local news story, I think, in Connecticut or whatever state it was. You know, he paid for this tennis court at the facility that she was living at because his mother liked to play tennis, even, you know, well into her 90s. He also tweeted about her on occasion when it was Mother's Day or it was her birthday. So it's not like he didn't acknowledge her. But I also remember that famous Playboy interview that he did where he inferred some stuff about his mother and his being sexually abused as a child. He did the same thing in an interview many years ago with Howard Stern when this subject came up. You know, kind of a lot of tap dancing around the issue, but never outright said it. So I believe he was estranged from his mother for a period of time. He had a stepmother as well, but I believe this would have been in reference. You know, most people read that and heard that and put two and two together based on what he said and kind of inferred. He certainly didn't deny it. And I believe he was estranged from her for a period of time. So I guess he must have made peace with her some time ago. It's all very strange. It's all very strange. But it was very eerie to read about that after I just mentioned her. I don't even think it was 2 weeks ago. And I just mentioned her. And then to find out that she just passed away is very eerie. But the Royal Rumble last night, I did push out the audio of the review. If you want the full meat and potatoes review, I advise you to go to the YouTube channel. You get it in full HD video, and you can like the video while you're there. But I did push the audio out to the feed for those who like the audio version. You can listen to the full recap there. I'll boil it down here to the nuts and bolts for you. The worst part of last night's Royal Rumble was that I was really looking forward to the show. You heard me talk about this. You heard me talk about how on paper this looked like a pretty solid card, and I was really looking forward to both championship matches and, of course, the Royal Rumble matches. It's always fun to count down and see who comes out and follow along and see what little stories are told in these matches. And when it was over, I was left very underwhelmed. I was left very disappointed. Not even by the finishes. And I know there's a lot of people who are very upset that they gave the Rumble wins to two part-timers again instead of trying to put somebody over. And I've already talked about this. I've addressed the fact that this is a fallacy. There is this fallacy that the Royal Rumble is used or is supposed to be used to put over a new talent. When the Royal Rumble, in fact, there have been very few years. There have been a few, but there have been very few years where the Rumble has been used for that purpose. That is not traditionally what the Royal Rumble is for. You have had a lot of big names who didn't necessarily need the rub go into the Royal Rumble and win because they were going to the main event of WrestleMania. There was a story with that that WWE was trying to tell, right? Steve Austin went in there and won three Royal Rumbles. We've had Undertaker win the Royal Rumble when he didn't really have to, but he did anyway. John Cena, Randy Orton. But we can go up and down the list here. But people in their minds have it that, well, the Royal Rumble is supposed to be used for this. It's rarely been used for that purpose. So I don't get disappointed so much in that anymore. If anything, you could say, well, maybe that's what King of the Ring is for. And we all know how much emphasis they put on King of the Ring. So it wasn't even the finishes, like who won, that bothered me. It played out exactly the way that I predicted it would, especially on the men's side. It was how goddamn boring it all was. Especially that main event. The best analogy that I can use is that WWE, they got to their planned destination. It got to where it needed to go heading into WrestleMania. But the ride was very long and very boring. That is how the 2022 Royal Rumble will be remembered. They got to where they needed to go with the people they put over. But my God, was the ride there a fucking bore. One of the absolute worst Royal Rumble matches that I have ever seen. I didn't say the worst, but one of the worst Royal Rumble matches I've seen. There are some Rumbles that have made me angry with the way they've booked the matches and the finishes. I wouldn't even say this one made me angry. This one didn't really make me feel much of anything other than just apathy. That's almost as bad. That's almost as bad as anger. It was just completely lifeless. Predictable? Absolutely. But predictable does not always mean bad. This was bad. There was no story threaded throughout the match. It was all about Brock Lesnar coming out after being screwed by Paul Heyman out of the WWE title earlier in the night, coming back, entering the Rumble, and winning the match. And since he came out at number 30, they felt they didn't really need to even try, it felt like. They threw Johnny Knoxville in there to do some spots. They threw Bad Bunny in there to do some spots. At least he does them well. I'll give him that. Bad Bunny does not look bad when he's in there doing those spots. He and Shane McMahon were the big surprises outside of Lesnar. Those are your two big surprises in the Men's Royal Rumble match. It was all very dull. The crowd didn't seem to care for much of it either, which made it even worse. You know, sometimes a hot, enthusiastic crowd can make a difference, but you didn't have that last night, that's for sure. But 20 years later, Paul Heyman screws Brock Lesnar out of the WWE Championship once again. It was 20 years ago with the Survivor Series in Madison Square Garden that Paul Heyman did this very thing, and Brock Lesnar fell for it again last night. Did I call that one or what? Right after Brock won that title and they announced the Lashley match, I said Lashley wins the title. Heyman and the Bloodline screw Brock Lesnar. Brock comes back out. He wins the Royal Rumble. That is how you get back to Lesnar and Reigns at WrestleMania. At least the people who won both Royal Rumble matches this year will actually be main eventing WrestleMania, as the Rumble winners are supposed to. That's probably the best thing I could say about it. You're getting two people going to WrestleMania who are going to headline night one and night two. But the Brock Lesnar-Bobby Lashley singles match is the match that I was most looking forward to on this card. I've been looking forward to this match for a very long time. Didn't think it was going to happen. Was losing hope that they were ever going to put these two in the ring together. And finally, we got the match last night. And even that match, I thought was a disappointment. But Bobby had to win. If you saw the build-up to this match on TV in the weeks leading up to this, Bobby Lashley had to win this match. He didn't win strong. I never expected him to go over clean. But he won. He is now the WWE champion for the second time, and that's what matters. Now, who he faces at WrestleMania depends a lot, I think, on the status of Seth Rollins going forward. Because the issue with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins does not appear to be over. The best thing on the show last night, if the main event was the worst, the best thing on the show last night was the opening match. Roman Reigns defending the Universal title against Seth Rollins. Seth coming out in the Shield gear to the old Shield theme music, coming through the crowd, playing mind games with Roman, trying to get in his head, trying to fuck with his mind. I thought that was great. I thought it told a great story, and I thought the action in the match was really good. It was a really fun, really good match between those two. I know a lot of people were very sour on the cheap DQ finish. That didn't bother me too much because I enjoyed the match and because I didn't want them taking that title yet off Roman. It keeps the championship on Roman a little bit longer heading into WrestleMania. I think that's the right move to make. But when this match was over, it didn't feel to me like this issue between the two of them is over. Now, they could blow it off in Saudi Arabia at the Chamber pay-per-view next month. But I'm not so sure that you can't include Seth Rollins in this Universal title picture even heading into WrestleMania. Now, Big E is officially back on the SmackDown roster. That's according to the announcers, the way they were talking on SmackDown on Friday night. The language they were using, they used the word officially a couple of different times. The announcers did. Megan Morant, the backstage interviewer, said, what does it feel like to officially be back on SmackDown? So, it appears that Big E is back on SmackDown without any fanfare at all. He's just back. He's back with Kofi Kingston. The New Day is reunited. The last match Big E had on Raw was a loss to Seth Rollins. And Big E right now, boy, when he came out in that Royal Rumble match, I know that he was one of the favorites, I think, in the odds and the betting odds, and a lot of people were hoping maybe they would see Big E get a big win after the way he got fucked at day one. I felt bad for the guy. Maybe Big E is going to win the Royal Rumble. I never thought there was any realistic shot of that happening. But when he came out last night and made his entrance, and he was a late entrant in that Royal Rumble match, nobody cared. He, and this is part of the problem, so many guys came out in that Rumble match last night who just didn't feel special. They didn't really feel like much of a star. Big E was lumped into that category, and Big E, up until a few weeks ago, was the WWE champion. And he came out, and he felt like just some random undercard guy. There was no excitement. Oh, it's Big E. He might actually win. Nobody seemed to care. Big E feels as cold as a block of ice right now. And I do believe that the Big E singles push is now over. Even if he is still on Raw, you've got Seth Rollins. You've got AJ Styles. I mean, there are names that are far more likely, I think, to get the shot at Bobby Lashley than Big E. But based on what they said on Friday, he may not even be on Raw anymore, so it doesn't really matter. According to WrestleVotes, WWE doesn't have any plans locked in whatsoever for the WWE Championship. The WWE title is the secondary title in this company. You know, whatever title Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar are holding, that is going to be the top title. The WWE title has been and will continue to play second fiddle. So they haven't even given any thought to what they're going to do with the WWE Championship. They'll figure it out later. You would think being so close to WrestleMania, they would have this figured out already. But apparently they don't know yet. Kofi Kingston was another story in the Rumble last night. It was a story because he went for his annual Rumble save spot where he gets eliminated, but not really. And how is Kofi going to find his way back in the ring? Well, the streak is over, because last night Kofi Kingston botched the Rumble save spot. He got eliminated when he wasn't supposed to. He was supposed to work some spots with Big E later in the match. Obviously, that did not happen. And the way they shot it, there was no way out of it. You know, if they didn't show his feet touching the floor as the spot happened, they might have been able to wiggle their way out of it and not show a replay. But the camera was right on him. There was no way around it. You just could not keep him in the match. So they had no choice but to eliminate him. That spot is so played out. Whether it's Kofi, we've seen Dolph, we've seen Naomi do it in the Women's Rumble in the past. I mean, she kind of tried to do it last night. It has become Kofi's thing. Many years ago, it became Kofi's thing, and it was kind of cute at first. He would find different clever ways to stay in the match. But it became this annual thing. It's like, we have to do the contrived, how will he get back in the ring spot? I hope I don't see that spot again for at least another 10 years. They need to bury that 6 feet under and leave it there. Let it ferment under the dirt. And maybe when they bring it back years from now, it'll actually feel special again. But it was bound to happen. You get cute one too many times and eventually it's going to come back to bite you on the ass. And that's what happened to Kofi Kingston last night. But Bad Bunny and Shane McMahon, they were among the last names in the ring for the Men's Royal Rumble match. They were among the final names in the ring vying for a championship match in the main event of WrestleMania. But they had Bad Bunny in there at the very end. They had Shane McMahon in there at the very end. You want to have him in the match, that's fine. But it's what I mean when I say there was no real drama to any of it. They did have the match come down to Lesnar and McIntyre. They were playing off their last interaction in the Rumble 2 years ago when Drew eliminated Brock. This time it was Brock eliminating Drew. Now, I don't know how many of you saw the post-show promo, Drew McIntyre with him in the back. They put it up on their WWE YouTube channel. First of all, he said things are far from over with him and Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin, which just made me physically ill hearing that. But more interesting than that, he talked about wanting to get the WrestleMania moment that he was deprived of. When he beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 36, he did it in an empty warehouse. He did not have that WrestleMania moment in front of a large crowd, right, where he won the championship. He was in front of a crowd last year, and he lost. Fair and square, clean. Lost to Bobby Lashley. So him talking about wanting to still get that moment, there's still time between now and WrestleMania, there's at least a chance that they might want to try to work Drew McIntyre into the Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar match, which I'm not really feeling that. I would much rather if they're going to put somebody in there, and I'm never really hot on the idea of a multi-man match in the main event of WrestleMania. I mean, they've done it a few times, but I'd rather it be one-on-one. But if they're going to do a triple threat, honestly, I would rather it be someone like Rollins than McIntyre in that match. But they're kind of leaving that open as a possibility, it looks like, just based on how he was talking. By the way, earlier in the day, Mustafa Ali, who is still employed by WWE, again, they have not released him from his contract despite his release request. He tweeted, "No, I would not like to be in the Rumble. I would like my release." So they must have gone to him and said, "Hey, we want you in the Rumble, or would you like to be in the Rumble?" And he was like, "No, actually, I would like my release papers." I think he'll be waiting a little longer for that. Now, over on the women's side, the worst-kept secret in wrestling, Ronda Rousey, the return of Rowdy Ronda Rousey in the Royal Rumble match. We knew she was going to be back. We just didn't know if she would be in the Rumble, or would she be showing up after the Rumble? Would she be showing up after Becky Lynch's match to confront her? We didn't know. But we knew she would be there. We knew she would have some involvement. Ronda came back in the Rumble. She was a late entrant. She is back, by the way, on a one-year contract. This is not a quick one-and-done, you know, type of thing. I don't know that she'll be on television every week. I don't even think she should be. But like her last deal, where she debuted at WrestleMania 34, left after WrestleMania 35, sounds like a similar deal where she'll be around until either the Rumble or WrestleMania in LA next year. WrestleMania next year would be my guess, as far as the length of how long we'll see her. Question is, what is she doing at WrestleMania? Well, we know she's going to the main event, probably on night one. It came down to her and Charlotte Flair as the final two in the Women's Rumble match. And Ronda dumped Charlotte, which means she gets to pick the champion that she wants to challenge. Is it going to be Charlotte, or is it going to be Becky Lynch? The belief, and Meltzer says it's going to be Charlotte and Ronda. That's the plan. Because bringing Ronda back, the idea is to put her on SmackDown. This is sort of a nice little gift that they're giving to Fox. Fox wants a big name, and it'll make them very happy to have Ronda Rousey on their show. So if Ronda's going to be on SmackDown, then she's going to be wrestling Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. And the good thing about that, if that's how this pans out, the good thing about her wrestling Charlotte is that they can still do Becky Lynch against Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's title. I would hate it if Bianca, much like Sasha, this appears to be what's happening with Sasha Banks, I would hate to see Bianca get iced out because Ronda decided to come back, and even though they had a plan that they were working towards, well, Ronda's the bigger star, and so, you know, fuck you, you're on the side now. Bianca can still get her title match against Becky if Charlotte and Ronda have their match on the SmackDown side. Sasha Banks, speaking of Sasha, she made a surprise return on SmackDown Friday night, officially announced that she was going to be in the Women's Royal Rumble match. She was number one in the Rumble. She didn't last very long. I don't even think she lasted a full 10 minutes And the way that they eliminated her from the match was so anticlimactic and so unbelievably stupid. I think it was Zelina Vega just kind of kicked her off the apron and she fell to the floor. It reminded me, even the way the elimination was done, it reminded me so much of what they did with Daniel Bryan in 2015. And I pointed out last night that image as Bryan is sitting on the floor after just falling to the ground. And you look up at the Titantron, Goldust is coming out next, and all it says is Shattered Dreams. Indeed. I cannot think of a more apropos image. But that's what this felt like. Even if she wasn't going to win, right? Because I said, if Ronda's in the Rumble, Ronda's going to win. There's no way she loses if she's in the Rumble match. I said that on Friday night. So if Ronda was going to be in, I didn't have any illusions about Sasha Banks winning or Bianca Belair winning the Royal Rumble. But to eliminate her in the way that they did and not keep her around at least until Charlotte got in the match is just completely ridiculous to me. Or have her do some fun stuff with Lita. You know, this is supposed to be fun. Forget booking for a second. Forget booking and analyzing everything for a second, okay? This is supposed to be fun. If I were booking the Royal Rumble, I would look at it and go, okay. Obviously, I need to know what my plan is as far as WrestleMania. But just in a vacuum, one night in this Rumble, what are some of the fun interactions and fun spots that I can put together? Maybe there's two people that you would never expect to fight each other or interact with each other. We kind of got that with Brock and Matt Riddle briefly in the men's Rumble. And I would try to figure that out and come up with some cool stuff. So maybe you do something with Sasha and Lita. Or, you know, you had Mickie James in there, right? The Impact Knockouts champion. You do something with her and Sasha or her and Ronda or something like that. It just felt like to me they didn't bother trying to come up with a lot of stuff that would have been really fun. And some of these eliminations were just head-scratching. Sasha, they aired a video, by the way, a WrestleMania promo video with her. It was all about Sasha. It was a nice video. But you would watch that, and you would think that she was absolutely in the plans for a title match with Charlotte at WrestleMania. And with Ronda coming back, it looks like they may have abandoned that plan. But they play. Otherwise, it's a very strange video for them to air. I think it illustrates how last minute all of this stuff came together. Because I think the plan was for Sasha to probably win the Rumble and to go to Mania to challenge Charlotte. I think the one eliminating Charlotte at the end of this was going to be her. I thought the women's Rumble was decent. It was more entertaining than the men's match, I can tell you that. I know that's a low bar to clear, but it was still better. And it had some little side stories. I appreciate that. You know, you may not like the Naomi and Sonya Deville stuff that it's continuing to drag on like this, but, you know, they played off that story. That was one of the little side stories of the match. It wasn't just Charlotte. Charlotte entering herself, that was a story unto itself. But you had other little ones like the Naomi and the Sonya Deville stuff. Naomi eliminating Sonya, Sonya staying out there and then eliminating Naomi a few minutes later. Of course, you had poor Cameron of the Funkadactyls making her return for one night. I'm sure she is going to cry herself to sleep that she had both Melina and Alicia Fox in the same Royal Rumble match as her, and she didn't get to interact with either one of them. Hopefully she got a picture and an autograph with them in the back. And lastly, yeah, I mentioned Mickie James. Mickie did come out with the Impact Knockouts title around her waist, which was a cool visual. She came out to her hardcore country song. She lasted a little while. She didn't get dumped out right away. In fact, I think she had a couple of eliminations, or at least one. But, you know, it was what it was. I still feel like we're going to get the announcement of a Hall of Fame induction for her this year. Jimmy Smith on commentary referred to Michelle McCool as a WWE Hall of Famer at one point. And that's something to keep an eye out for, because I don't know that that was a slip of the tongue and a mistake so much as it was a sign of what may be coming in the class of 2022. And I floated this on the stream last night. You know, they're in Texas this year. And so it makes me wonder if both Undertaker and Michelle McCool might be going into the Hall of Fame together. Not as a package, but that they both might be part of the same Hall of Fame class this year. You know, they are in Texas. Undertaker is a Texas boy. Texas Red. So it would not surprise me. But anyway, that's my autopsy on the Royal Rumble. The full review is up for your viewing pleasure. And again, I thank the almost 4,000 people who joined me live, even at 2:30 in the morning. We still had just shy of 3,000 people watching me and listening to me ramble on YouTube. So can't tell you how much that means to me. I appreciate that. You know, the more I think about that idea of making the Mania match a triple threat, and I'm going against my own rule even by saying this, but the idea of doing Lesnar, Reigns, and then working Seth Rollins into that match, as great as he's been lately, you know, in the ring, the work he's been doing, and having Rollins maybe be the one to go over and end WrestleMania with the championship, is something I'm warming to. And ever since I brought that up last night on the stream, I am warming to the idea of maybe having that as the main event on night two. Let's switch over to AEW just real quick. I got some thoughts and some notes on that. That Beach Break show that they did in Cleveland, and again, what a stupid thing to have a Beach Break show in Cleveland in January. There's no way around it. It's just completely idiotic. But they had the ladder match on Wednesday to unify the TNT titles with Cody Rhodes and Sammy Guevara. I thought it was one of the best matches in Dynamite history. It was just an insanely dangerous, insanely crazy match, and I will not soon forget the cutter spot from Sammy Guevara, where he propelled himself off the top rope onto the top of a ladder and then sprung off the ladder and caught Cody in a picture-perfect cutter off the top. The way Cody flattened his body, he did everything in his power to make that thing look good on the way down. It didn't look awkward. It didn't look weird. And it's amazing that both guys got out of that match unscathed. But Sammy Guevara, I was surprised to see him walk away with the win. I was pleasantly surprised to see him get the win over Cody and unify those two titles. Now, for those who may not have seen it, Cody was interviewed on their YouTube channel after the show. He was sitting on one of those equipment boxes in the back. The interviewer kind of cornered him and had some questions about how are you feeling after that match. And the interview and it's about 3.5 minutes long, and I would recommend that everybody go find this video if you have not already seen it. Because I watched this video. He is far more likable in that setting than when he is trying to overthink his promos on TV. And he is writing everything out in advance, and he wants to cover all of these different topics and talk about this and talk about racism. Like this right here, what you see in that video. If he did more stuff like this on television, if they showed more of this type of stuff on TV, he'd be one of the biggest baby faces in the company if stuff like this aired on Dynamite. And in that video, he confirmed the Sean Ross Sapp story that he is working without a contract at the moment, only on a handshake deal with Tony Khan. He's not even on payroll. He swore on his dog Pharaoh's life. He put over Sammy Guevara. He put over the TNT title as something that will never be secondary to him because of matches like what we saw on Wednesday. Like, everything that he was talking about felt genuine. It was not some memorized, rehearsed, scripted bullshit. I mean, not that the promos in AEW, I think, are scripted, but you know what I mean, where it kind of feels forced, and he just spoke from the heart. And it was a great babyface promo. You watch that, you just think, how could you not like this guy? Right? And then maybe you realize, okay, well, there's a few reasons why, right? The way he comes across on TV sometimes. But anyway, I just thought that video, it would have been great if they would have found 3.5 minutes to air that on TV. There was a lights out match at the end of the show with Adam Cole against Orange Cassidy. And this has been something of a lightning rod for a lot of opinion coming out of that show. Adam Cole lost. He got pinned by Orange Cassidy. And immediately people were saying, oh, he's buried. Adam Cole hasn't been in AEW for that long. And, oh, he made the wrong decision by leaving WWE and he's already buried. No, he's not buried. He was buried under the rubble of the stage that they fell through, but he was not buried in that match. In fact, I still believe that he should challenge Hangman Page for the AEW world title at Revolution in March. Now, in AEW, in kayfabe, we know that losses in a non-sanctioned match like this, they don't count towards win-loss records. So, he could very well still be in line for a world championship match, okay? It is not the finish that I would have done. I understand that, okay, in the rankings it doesn't count. But it doesn't change the visual of him being pinned by Orange Cassidy. A loss is a loss, okay? I get that. It is not the finish that I would have done. I would not have had Adam Cole lose to Orange Cassidy, even in a non-sanctioned match. But Cassidy is one of the more over guys on that roster. You may not understand why. I may not even always understand why. But he is still very popular. They still push him pretty hard. And they've largely protected him in his time in AEW. So the idea that because Adam Cole lost to Orange Cassidy, this largely protected over babyface in this company, and lost to him, mind you, after falling off of the entrance tunnel, after coming into the match undefeated. All of these things, Adam Cole, undefeated, and the way he lost, that, oh, he lost this match and so he's buried. It's one of those uses of the word that just really annoys me, because it's thrown around by people who don't know what it actually means. Adam Cole is not buried. Hangman Page is going to defend his AEW World title against Lance Archer in 2 weeks in a Texas death match on TV. Danhausen made a cameo in the main event. He was under the ring when Adam Cole went to pull out a chair. Danhausen was holding on to it. So he is now officially All Elite. He has signed with the company. It's very, very nice to see him recovered, or mostly recovered, from his leg injury, because I remember that being pretty gruesome. And I'm sure they'll have some fun with him. I'm sure they'll do some great comedy with him and Orange Cassidy at some point on TV. The CM Punk segment with MJF. They are finally going to be wrestling on Dynamite this Wednesday in Chicago. There was one final kind of like go-home segment with the two of them on TV this week. I like the fact they're doing the match on TV this week, by the way, and they're not waiting until Revolution. MJF should win this match on Wednesday, and then they could always run it back a second time at the pay-per-view. The segment itself, though, this past week, I was not a huge fan of. And this is why I'm happy to see them doing the match finally this week. We have reached the point, as much as, you know, and I still enjoy a lot of the banter, but they're starting to repeat themselves. It's starting to get very tiresome. A lot of these segments have been unnecessarily long. You know, these Punk segments and these promos with MJF back and forth. I don't think there's enough material there to keep things interesting for another 5 or 6 weeks to get that first match in at the pay-per-view. They've already done Punk against MJF, or Punk against Wardlow, Punk against Shawn Spears. What else can they do to keep this interesting? Not much. Everyone's waiting for Wardlow to snap and go nuts on MJF. But what else can they do to keep the stuff with Punk and MJF interesting outside of putting them in the ring finally for the first time? There's nothing else they can do. It's already getting a little old. So I think you give MJF the win. Punk could win the rematch at Revolution. And you could probably squeeze a third match out of it. Maybe that's where the split finally happens. I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll happen on TV this Wednesday. I kind of think they want to at least get to that ladder match at Revolution. If Wardlow is going to be in that face of the Revolution ladder match, with the winner getting a shot at the TNT title at some point, MJF has said, you know, Wardlow is going to be in the match. When you win, when you go on to win the championship, you're going to hand it to me. I would be surprised if they did the split this week. I think they want to at least wait until after Revolution. So you could get 2 or 3 matches out of it with these guys. But MJF, I think, absolutely should win that first match. There was a match on Rampage with FTR. Turned out to be a pretty decent match by the end there. They got a win over Brock Anderson and Lee Johnson. And I bring this up only because it made me think with FTR, you know, as the days and weeks continue to wear on, I'm starting to think the idea of FTR against the Briscoes on AEW television is not the plan at all. Instead, I think they're saving that match for Ring of Honor's first show back in April on WrestleMania weekend. I think they're doing that Super Card of Honor show on April 1st. I mean, the angle they shot at Final Battle was on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, not on an AEW show. And AEW has not acknowledged this ongoing, you know, online spat between these two teams. They have not acknowledged it at all on any of their television shows. Now, they could do more than one match. They could split them where you do one in Ring of Honor and you do one in AEW. But I'm surprised it has not even been hinted at on TV. And if the Briscoes are free, I'm surprised that they haven't made a play to bring them in yet. Unless they're just, biding their time for some reason. But the Briscoes are no longer bound to anybody. They I don't believe, are under Ring of Honor contract anymore, because most people aren't. They've already been released from their deals. Other news and notes, and we got some stories to get into here. Per PW Insider, I wanted to mention this first. There are several former WWE stars whose 90-day non-compete clauses are expiring in a matter of days, which is going to free them up to sign with another company and to start making appearances. So I just wanted to run through some of these names. This is not a list of all the names, but the ones that I think are worth mentioning. Now, Oney Lorcan is already booked for Beyond Wrestling on Friday. Grand Metalik, who asked for and received his release, Ali is weeping somewhere about that. He's wrestling for GCW this Friday under his former persona of Mascara Dorado. He's someone, by the way, that Bryan Danielson once said he would love to step into the ring with. Karrion Kross, who already has a few indie dates booked, is officially, he and Scarlett, I guess, are officially going to be free. I don't see him going to AEW. At least not right away. I don't know. Just a feeling I have. I don't see him going to AEW right away. But this man I do. Keith Lee is about to become a free man. And I do believe that he will end up on AEW television very soon. His girlfriend, Mia Yim, is also going to be free. Lindsay Dorado is going to be free. Ember Moon, who would be a fantastic addition to the AEW women's division. And Harry Smith, who, if nothing else, should be part of that Owen Hart Cup tournament in a few months. It would make sense for him and Brian Pillman Jr. They don't even have to win it, but just to have some kind of involvement in that tournament, I think, would make sense. I don't see Harry Smith coming in full-time or anything, but those are the names that are coming up, I think, in just a matter of days. And then a little bit later on in the month of February, these are the names that will be free of their non-compete. These were the people who were released on November 18th. Tegan Knox, I could see her popping up either in AEW or in Impact Wrestling and helping out that women's division. John Morrison, he would be a great addition wherever he goes, right? Johnny Elite, although there may be another Johnny Elite coming in very soon. I'll talk about that here in a quick second. Isaiah Swerve Scott, who is already, I think, booked on at least one independent show. And Top Dollar, the other member of Hit Row, who recently said he believes he will be back in WWE at some point. If they were dying to have him back, they wouldn't have fired him in the first place. Of all the names I just mentioned, I think Keith Lee and Ember Moon, those are really the only two slam dunks I expect to show up for sure in AEW. Now, don't forget, though, I mentioned Johnny Elite, right? Don't forget Johnny Gargano is also out there. And after the baby is born next month and he's ready to make a move, I do believe AEW is going to be his landing spot. Some people were very upset he didn't show up in Cleveland, his hometown, on Wednesday. They never advertised him. That was people talking it into their own minds. Reportedly, though, he has already had discussions with Tony Khan about potentially coming in. I think it's only a matter of when and not if. That's why I said the whole Johnny Elite thing, it may be Gargano and not Morrison that make it to AEW first. This next story may end up in the long term being the most important story I talk about on the podcast this week. We may look back on this, maybe not even months, maybe years from now, as one of the most important stories. Nick Khan made a deal this week that will see Disney partnering with WWE to bring the WWE network to its Disney Plus Hotstar service in Indonesia, starting with this weekend's Royal Rumble. And what it means could have implications, I think, far beyond Indonesia. This is a big deal. WWE live events will stream on the service as part of a standard subscription. Both companies are said to have had discussions about a similar deal or similar deals in other countries. And according to a story on Deadline.com, Disney Plus Hotstar launched in 2020 and has accounted for more than one-third of the 118 million global subscribers of Disney Plus. So that works out to be around 40 million subscribers. And it says, in many places, notably India, Disney Plus is offered as a low-cost add-on to the Hotstar service, which has been around since 2015. This is a big deal for a few different reasons. I know the first thing a lot of people are going to think of is a potential future sale of the company. I do believe the WWE is going to be sold in the next 5 years. I don't think it's something imminent. I don't think it's something happening in the next 12 to 24 months. But a lot of the moves that they have been making, they're making this company as attractive as possible for a potential sale. All the signs are there. Nick Khan, again this week in an interview with the Sports Business Journal, said they aren't looking to sell the company. He admitted that they've taken some phone calls from companies who are looking to buy, but he said they are not in any active conversations about it right now, and they are not actively looking to sell. Actively is a funny word. There was a time that I wasn't actively looking to leave my job to go somewhere else, but I would have welcomed an offer from another company willing to pay me more money. You know, I never thought Disney would buy WWE. I think there's a better chance of them selling to someone like NBC Universal, who they have an existing relationship with and who have, you know, a lot of money like Disney does if they wanted to acquire WWE or even acquire a majority stake one day in WWE. But now, for the first time, they're doing a deal with Disney. And if this deal goes well, maybe they do another deal with them in another country. And if that goes well, maybe it opens up some eyes at Disney to the potential of either working with WWE or taking it one step further. You know, Disney has been in acquisition mode for many years. They own a lot of things, some that people might not even be aware of that they own. They bought Marvel for $4 billion. That was over a decade ago, and they made more than half of that on Avengers Endgame alone. It's the biggest movie of all time. I'd say that deal paid for itself. Then they bought Lucasfilm for the same amount of money, and they made it all back on 3 Star Wars movies. That's all it took. 3. They own ABC Network, which means they own most of ESPN as well. They own the FX networks. They own 60% of Hulu. WWE has content on there as well. You know, it was only a few years ago that Stephanie McMahon made the comment, and I mentioned it on the show. She made the comment that in the next 10, 20, 30 years, there's no reason the WWE can't be as big or bigger than Disney. Which sounded preposterous then, it sounds every bit as preposterous now. But just because WWE is not going to be the next Disney does not mean that the mouse would not want to get in bed with them and do business with them if they think that they can make money off of it. You know, the tribal chief might one day have his own ride at Disney World. But forget the possibility of a future sale for a second, all right? Put that on the side. There's something else that is coming a lot sooner, and it's not Veer. It's the end of the rights deals that WWE signed with NBC Universal and Fox for Raw and SmackDown. Those negotiations are probably going to start up, you know, for the next deal as soon as this year. The end of 2022. Nick Khan last year was teasing the idea on one of these, I think, conference calls. He was teasing the idea of Apple or Amazon possibly getting into bidding for live sports rights at some point in the future. Who's to say that Disney doesn't have an interest in getting involved and putting SmackDown on one of the networks that they own? They're another player that could drive up the amount of money the WWE gets for its next rights deal. As bad as WWE programming can be, and we have seen a lot of bad programming in the last few years, okay? You and I both know how bad the programming can be. I've always said that I think they're going to make even more money on their next deal. I have never said that, oh my God, if they don't improve Monday Night Raw, then they're going to get canceled and they're not going to have any place to go. Quite the opposite. They are going to end up making even more money the next time around, whether they stay put, or whether they end up going somewhere else. This is why, by the way, nothing ever changes. They have no incentive to change. They have guaranteed money coming in. That was always the knock on a lot of those WCW guys who got guaranteed deals, and why Vince McMahon never wanted to give guaranteed deals in WWE. Guys get guaranteed money, they get lazy. Or at least that was the perception. They get guaranteed money, they don't have to work as hard. WWE is getting guaranteed millions and billions of dollars. They don't have the incentive because, you know, people on Twitter think that what they did was awful and their television is terrible. They don't give a shit. They don't give a fuck. And this is a very big part of why. They got what they wanted already. They can put out terrible programming and still make boatloads of money. So why bother to change? That takes effort. You know? So the last time it was $1 billion, next time it could be $2 billion. Not because the quality of the shows is so great, but because they produce a shitload of content. Think of all the hours of television this company produces, and they air live. It's live sports. And companies are still spending big bucks for live programming. That's not what this deal is with Disney that they just made. The deal itself is not really the news. The news is WWE doing business at all with Disney and where it could potentially lead down the road. That's the real story to watch. This is why they brought Nick Khan into the company. Sami Zayn was on the podcast that is hosted by author Pat LaPrade. I don't have the name of it here, but he was on his podcast. He talked publicly for the very first time about signing a new multi-year deal with WWE. Hat tip to F4W Online for the partial transcription. The interview was done in French. He said, "Honestly, I don't know how people on the internet find this kind of information, but yes, it's true. I just signed for a few years and I'm really happy. My contract was almost over and they were interested in me staying. I wanted to stay, and so it was no more complicated than that. It is not the first time I have said it, but I'm really happy with my role in the company in recent years, especially in the last year and a half. I'm doing the best job of my career, especially in terms of my character. I don't know why people were really surprised. They have an idea in their heads that everybody in WWE is unhappy being there, unhappy with their role, and they want more or feel oppressed. Or I don't know what. For me, I'm really happy with my role, and I can't wait to see what I'm going to be able to do in the next few years. Of course, every talent in the locker room, everyone always wants more. It's normal. Even Roman Reigns, who is the number one in our company. It's everybody. So I'm not going to say 100% that I'm happy with what I have right now. I do the best I can, but there are things I don't control 100%. But with everything that has happened in the last year, I'm really happy to stay. I feel the company has confidence in me. They often use me in talking segments. I think I do a good job, and I find that the company recognizes my work. And that's why I'm always in a storyline. Maybe that's why some talents weren't happy, because they think they never had an opportunity. I can't really say that. I get lots of them, and that is why I am really happy." I said it last week. This was a good keep for WWE. It was a good get. Sami is someone they can plug into almost any role they need him for. I have been enjoying his character work. It made sense for him to stay. There was really no good reason for him to leave. He's got a good thing going right now in WWE. And in the same interview, he talked about pitching an idea to creative to work a program with Jeff Hardy, who was one of his heroes as a teenager. Jeff was like an inspiration to him. His idea was for the two of them to have a ladder match at WrestleMania this year. He had a big storyline all planned out in his head. And then 2 weeks after speaking with the creative team about it, Jeff got fired. And so that idea went out the window. And on that note, there was a delicious story in this week's Observer newsletter that I absolutely loved. Jeff Hardy, as we all know, was fired a few months ago by WWE after making a very strange exit from the ring during a house show match. He wandered off into the crowd, never to be seen again. Given his track record, WWE feared the worst, and he was drug tested. The company reportedly asked him to go to rehab. He refused. He didn't think he had a problem. And WWE fired him. They let him go for refusing to go to rehab. Now, this was at a time when they had plans for Jeff on SmackDown. He was doing some tag matches with Drew McIntyre. They had a lot of plans for him, including a run in NXT. He was going to be the shaman for MSK. And after he was fired, Matt Riddle got that spot instead. I don't know how much more he might have done in NXT, but, you know, he would have been a good fit for 2.0. His face paint matched the color scheme of the show. He would have been a better fit than Riddle, I think, on NXT. After he was fired, though, Matt Hardy, on one of his Twitch streams, said that he thought WWE jumped the gun on releasing his brother. He said WWE drug tested him after all of this stuff happened, and he told us to wait until we hear the results. This is what Matt said. He said, wait until we hear the results, and when he comes back clean, everybody can hopefully feel better about the whole situation. Meanwhile, we have not heard anything about any such test results. Now we learn that John Laurinaitis called Jeff Hardy a few weeks ago to try to get him to come back to the company and to sweeten the pot, to convince him to come on back to WWE. They offered him a spot in this year's Hall of Fame class. I just love the idea that they dangle the Hall of Fame carrot in front of people thinking, well, this, if they're unsure about coming back, surely this will convince them to sign a new contract, a new 2-, 3-, 4-year deal with our company. We'll just dangle the Hall of Fame in their face. The very prestigious spot in the WWE Hall of Fame. They thought that would be enough to convince him after firing him to get him to come back. And look, I defended WWE after that whole fiasco. I thought that they did what they felt they had to do, given Jeff's history. I didn't blame them for what happened. There were people jumping on WWE, and I didn't. I was not one of those people. I actually said, you know what? I kind of side with the company here. But Laurinaitis called Jeff, and Jeff rightfully said no. He turned down their offer, and he asked instead for his drug test results, since he knew he wouldn't test positive for any kind of recreational drugs. Yeah, everybody is so hung up on the drug stuff. You know, if Jeff was drunk, and I'm not saying he was, but if people said he was acting erratically, you know, he could have been under the influence of something. Jeff's had issues with alcohol, not just drugs, in the past. I mean, they did a whole fucking storyline built around this with Sheamus last summer. Or it was 2 years ago, maybe. But Jeff's had issues with alcohol. You know, he could have taken a drug test and come up clean. But if he had been drinking, that wouldn't have come up on a drug test. So I don't know why people think that the almighty drug test coming back clean, if it did, automatically means that Jeff was completely clean and sober and lucid that night. Maybe he was. But I think WWE had a right to be concerned, you know, given this guy's history. Apparently, Jeff and his wife did get the drug test results back. It took them 6 weeks to get them, but they did get them. WWE absolutely does not want Jeff Hardy going to AEW. They do not want him walking into AEW to reunite the Hardy Boys with his brother, because they know that as soon as his non-compete is up in March, that's exactly where he's headed. We all know that Tony Khan is going to have that contract in hand the second that non-compete expires. This also shows that even though he's still within his 90-day non-compete period and they're still paying him, they can't just unfire him. For anybody wondering how these types of things work. But there isn't a doubt in my mind that he is AEW bound in a couple of months. He and Matt are already booked for their first match back together on March 12th for Big Time Wrestling up in Massachusetts. The Briscoes are wrestling SAT, and the winner of that match will go on to wrestle the Hardy Boys in the main event. There is money in one last Hardy's reunion. You know, they'll have plenty of teams to work with in AEW, right? From FTR to the Bucks to Red Dragon. Santana and Ortiz are finally getting some more TV time. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, Private Party. I mean, the list goes on. The Acclaimed. I would just want to be absolutely sure that Jeff's head is in a good place before I sign him. The whole situation is very weird. You know, Jeff was talking before he got fired like he was genuinely happy with the spot that he was in. I just read, you know, Sami Zayn's comments on that podcast about how happy he was to re-sign with WWE because he's really happy with what they have him doing and he's really happy in the spot that he's in. That's the same thing that Jeff was saying. That's the same vibe I got from listening to Jeff Hardy when he would do interviews and when he was on the Broken Skull Sessions with Steve Austin, which I think dropped Was it right before or right after they fired him? It was like 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after he got fired. It's like, oops. It's Jeff Hardy's interview on the network with Steve Austin. But again, go back and listen to what he was saying. He seemed genuinely happy with the spot that he was in. And he told Austin he was about to go pitch an idea to creative for a character change that he was very excited about. Probably Willow or that Itchweed character that he does. But he said he really wanted to work a program against Roman Reigns, which they absolutely could have gotten a match out of that before WrestleMania. They could have done that match at the Royal Rumble last night. You know, we could have gotten Roman Reigns against Jeff Hardy. You know, with doing the big comeback story with Jeff. Can he do it? You know, can he win the title one last time? And he wouldn't. But, I mean, I was pitching that idea months ago, and he wanted the match too. You know, he flat out said he wanted to work with Reigns. I did not get the sense that he was just saying those things just for the sake of saying them. I think he was genuine. And so it didn't make any sense to me, and it still doesn't, this theory that people peddle that he faked a relapse or pretended to have a concussion or so. I mean, the whole thing is just ridiculous. He didn't fake a fucking relapse for crying out loud. I mean, you know, or a concussion or anything like that. A year earlier, I could have believed that he wanted out of that company, given how he was booked. Absolutely. But then he re-signed with them. He signed a new contract. If he was so unhappy with them, why did he sign a new contract? It wasn't long ago that he re-signed a new deal. If he was so unhappy, as people think he was, why did he re-sign with the company? I feel like we can ask this question about a lot of people who end up re-signing with the company and then go on to be unhappy about this or that. If he was that unhappy, then why did he sign a new contract? All of a sudden, in a matter of months, he wants out? He's conspiring to find a way to get out of his contract? It never made any sense to me. I think WWE jumped the gun. They lost a pretty big name, and they don't want that name to end up in AEW. They have basically handed Jeff Hardy to Tony Khan. And now they want him back. And look, we'll even put you in the Hall of Fame. I don't think Jeff would even want to go into the Hall of Fame without his brother. How are you going to put Jeff Hardy in the Hall of Fame before first putting the Hardy Boys into the Hall of Fame? That just would feel wrong to me. I would imagine Jeff probably had a good laugh when he saw the name on his caller ID that day. Speaking of people who don't seem to be very happy with their spot in WWE, Finn Balor. He appeared on the My Love Letter to Wrestling podcast, which is hosted by NXT UK star Mark Andrews. And he has some very interesting comments. I listened to it. I did listen to the audio, but credit to wrestlingnews.co for the transcription. I want to read some of this to you. He talked about still wanting to have a really good run as a heel. He said he kind of did in New Japan. They tried to do it in NXT, but it ended up going in a different direction. He basically ended up back as a babyface, is what happened. He said he's still looking for that really good heel run in WWE. I feel like I got a little bit stale. I was tired. I was exhausted. I was worn out by dealing with the politics, the office, the writers, and everything that goes with it. I just had enough. When I returned to NXT, I really felt that rejuvenated me in the ring. One thing I felt that helped with all the negative effects of the pandemic that was taking the fans out of the equation in wrestling makes you change your cadence and tempo in your matches because you're not trying to perform for a large audience. You're literally performing in a one-on-one environment and you can really work on the details of the match. You're not so reliant on hearing the audible response from the crowd. I would produce a match to get a yay or a boo or a holy shit. But then when you take that element out of it, you can get back down to the nuts and bolts of what I actually learned in Japan, which is just gritty wrestling. I really feel like despite all the negative things that the pandemic brought us, it brought me that one positive thing that I can really get back to wrestling for me and the way that I like to wrestle. So he admits he was tired, in his words, of the politics and the office and the writers. At the tail end of his first main event, main roster stint, before he ultimately ended up back in NXT. And then he revealed that when they wanted him back, he pitched going to NXT UK instead. He said, believe it or not, I actually pitched to go to NXT UK when they asked me to go to SmackDown, because I knew my time at NXT was coming to an end. It had been 2 years, and I worked with everybody. There really wasn't much more that I could do there. The idea came to go to SmackDown, and I counter-pitched with NXT UK. And they said, maybe in a couple of years, but we need you on SmackDown right now. Yes, they needed him on SmackDown so badly, they turned around 3 months later and moved him to Monday Night Raw. That's how badly they needed him on SmackDown. I guess they needed him for the one program, right? The one match with Roman Reigns. They needed him to lose to Roman Reigns, and after that, it didn't matter anymore. We can slide him on over to Raw. Anyway, he goes on. He says, for me, the move to NXT UK would have been the move. There's so many great guys there. Obviously, it's closer to home. I've been stuck in America for the last 2 years with COVID heightening the feeling of isolation in WWE and that bubble away from my friends and family. There were multiple reasons why I wanted to go to NXT UK, but the main one was because of guys like Noam, A-Kid, all of these matches I haven't really had the chance to put together. That was like a fresh challenge. Listening to him speak, because it's one thing just to read these comments, but to listen to the audio and listen to him speak, I do think that him being away from his friends and family for so long had a lot to do with him wanting to go to NXT UK. I mean, in his own words, he said that wasn't the main reason. He wanted to work with these other people. But I do think he was probably feeling homesick, you know, with the pandemic and not being able to see, you know, all of his family. But let's be honest here. Finn Balor is not a stupid person. Finn Balor is smart enough to know what would happen if he went back to the main roster. It was my biggest fear when he wrapped up with that last NXT run. It was a more, you know, aggressive version of that character that we saw from him. And the matches that he was having were great. And my fear was that the minute that he went back to Raw or SmackDown, smiley babyface Finn Balor would be back. And he went back. He got the title match against Roman Reigns. And they did that comically stupid finish that killed the demon dead, where the top rope broke and he fell flat on his face, and then it was never followed up on. Never followed up on. And what have they done with him since? Other than put over Austin Theory, what has he done? Now, to play devil's advocate, I would imagine that Finn Balor is making really good money. I mean, let's be honest, they're not paying this guy peanuts. I don't know if he's making $1 million a year, but he's probably making not too much less than that. He's probably making good coin working for WWE. So I can understand the company wanting him on Raw or SmackDown and not on a show that barely anybody watches. All due respect to the A-Kids and the Ilya Dragunovs of the world. I mean, they're all super talented. But WWE needs stars on TV now more than ever. Finn Balor is a star. Finn Balor is somebody that people like. Sending him to NXT UK, it's almost like sending him to a vast wasteland somewhere. Sending him to NXT UK, if he's making all of this money, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I'm still upset we never got the match between Balor and Walter that was scheduled before the pandemic hit. They were going to do that match in Dublin at a takeover show. So I can understand WWE's point of view on this. But if that's the case, then do something with him. If you want him so badly, if you want him on the main roster, then do something with him. Use him. That's my issue. Now we hear Vince McMahon is not as high on him as he used to be. He doesn't view him as a main event level talent anymore. He's kind of in the Jeff Hardy role of putting other people over. This guy was your first Universal Champion. And now, supposedly, he is not seen as a main event caliber talent anymore. Is it any wonder that this man was told, we want you on SmackDown, and his first instinct, his first reaction, instead of saying, fuck yeah, let's go, his first reaction was to say, well, here's what I was thinking. I have a different idea. Maybe send me over to Europe for a bit. Outsource me to another country. I want to go over there. That's not a man who sounds overly enthusiastic about going back to the main roster. And honestly, who can blame him? And finally, Ring of Honor announced plans this week to launch their own Hall of Fame to coincide with their 20th anniversary this year. Four inductees will make up the inaugural class, with the first inductee being announced tomorrow and the following three Mondays. Each episode of Ring of Honor TV in the month of February will be devoted to that week's inductee. There are a lot of names that come to mind when you think of the history of Ring of Honor, but the one that looms largest and the first man who should be on that list of inductees is Samoa Joe, the greatest Ring of Honor world champion in the history of that promotion, who also just so happens to be a free agent, or will be a free agent very shortly. They have not said if there will be a formal induction ceremony, but Joe absolutely should be one of those first four inductees. If there is a ceremony, maybe they don't want to front load it with, you know, all big names because they want to save some for next year and the year after that. But my first class of four inductees would be Joe, Bryan Danielson, CM Punk, and I would throw Jimmy Rave in there. Yeah, he just recently passed away. He wasn't a world champion like those other names were, but he was definitely a staple of those early Ring of Honor years, and I think it would be a nice way of honoring him. Plenty of other names they could honor in the future. You know, Low Ki, the very first Ring of Honor world champion. You've got Jay and Mark, the Briscoes, who have been with the promotion almost all the way through, except for 1 year, I think, in 2005. I mean, they have been ROH through and through for 20 years. Nigel McGuinness, who would need clearance from WWE to attend if there was an actual ceremony. You know, as would Seth Rollins and AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn. There's Adam Cole, there's Jay Lethal. So many of the names that you see on television every single week today grew up in Ring of Honor, cut their teeth, made names for themselves in Ring of Honor. And there's a lot of deserving names. And you know what? I'll throw in one more. I'll add to the list. And it doesn't have to be in this first class, but I want to throw his name out there. And that is Sweet and Sour, Larry Sweeney. Even though he only wrestled four matches during his 3 years with the company, that's it. He wrestled four matches his entire time with Ring of Honor. He was still a very big part of that company. The closest thing to a young Bobby Heenan, I think, that we have had, certainly in the last 20 years. But that would be my first class. Joe, Danielson, Punk, and Rave. You know, you want to swap out Punk for Low Ki and save Punk for next year. I mean, that's fine too. Right now, though, the bigger question is, what is Ring of Honor even going to look like when and if they return in April? I don't have much to say about Raw, since most of it was devoted to the build for the Royal Rumble, and the Rumble is now over. But it was not a bad show on Monday. The third hour dragged it down, as it usually does, but if that show on Monday night was 2 hours long, it would have been the best Raw they've done in months. You know, they had the weigh-in segment with Lesnar and Lashley. I thought that fell flat. I was disappointed we didn't get more interaction with Paul Heyman and MVP throughout the build to this match. And I know it didn't make much sense to do a weigh-in for a match that has no weight limits, but at least it was something other than a contract signing. I mean, those are just done to death. There was a United States Championship match between Kevin Owens and Damian Priest that Owens won by DQ, and Priest did the deal where he gets mad and he turns into the Hulk. He would not break the referee's five count when he was kicking Owens in the corner, and he got disqualified. And the crowd hated that finish, which they should have because it sucked. And I have noticed that Damian Priest hasn't been getting as much love lately from the crowds as he has gotten in the past. Damian Priest was over. The people really liked him. And I think they still like him. He's done nothing wrong. But WWE just had to go ahead and make a change to his character. And they added the whole, you know, you don't want to see him angry thing, where he gets the big bug eyes and he snaps when he gets mad. The Ken Shamrock thing, as it used to be called. And it has actually made him less over. I believe that this character change is what has made him less over. Now, if it leads to a heel turn, if that's the idea, then it won't matter. But you had somebody who was a popular babyface, and you made a tweak to the character that was completely unnecessary. And as a result, it has made him less popular than he was a year ago when he was tagging with Bad Bunny at WrestleMania. I enjoyed the Academic Challenge segment with the Alpha Academy and RK-Bro. You know, sometimes these comedy segments, they work. A lot of times, they don't. One example of a segment like this working, maybe the greatest example that I have ever seen on Monday Night Raw of something like this working, was the musical chair segment in Winnipeg with Chris Jericho and Ric Flair. And they had a whole cast of characters. I mean, they had Jonathan Coachman and Tajiri, Stacey Keibler, Jerry Lawler, Tomko. That was an all-timer. That was an all-time segment that had no business being as entertaining as it was. Chad Gable said that this would be the first in a triad of events happening over the next few weeks. Gable is getting great heat in these segments. I'm very happy to see him actually being used. You know, for so long they kept this guy on the back burner, and then they turned him into a fucking Harlem Globetrotter with a terrible name. The man is overdue for a push. And this week's challenge was a spelling bee. Now, the spelling bee brought back some terrible memories for me. I was in a spelling bee in the fourth grade, I'll never forget, and I was doing pretty well on stage. You know, it's always nerve-wracking to be up on stage in front of a group of people. But I was doing okay until I got hit with the word necessary. And I said that it was spelled N-E-C-C-E-S-S-A-R-Y. I stuck an extra C in there, and I was eliminated. And until my final day on this earth, when that last bit of breath leaves my lungs, I will always remember how to spell the word necessary. Gable misspelled the word delusion, thinking that it was dissolution. And Randy Orton had to spell the word dumbbell, which Kevin Patrick claimed is one of the most commonly misspelled words. And he got it right. Gable was not happy about losing, and Orton challenged him, and those two had a hell of a match. And Orton won with the RKO. I thought Gable sold it like a champ. Gable, he's just so fucking good. He's so good. Riddle said that they get to pick the next challenge. It's going to be a scooter race. So, two great segments on this show with these four guys. We got another Alexa Bliss therapy session, and now it is very clear that they are ditching the Lady Fiend persona. He asked her when she first met Lily. And she went on this rambling story about being bullied when she was 6 years old, and she looked up and there was Lily. So Lily was her imaginary friend after the other kids bullied and picked on her. We're making progress here. We are making progress in the story. And as good as Orton against Gable was, AJ Styles and Austin Theory had a very good match also. That Styles won with the phenomenal forearm. Vince McMahon clearly does not feel the same way about Finn Balor that he does about AJ Styles. But we got some good wrestling and some entertaining segments. There was nothing offensive about this week's show. I'll take it. And I hope that they have another show like this one planned for tomorrow, because coming after the Rumble, I would think the Raw audience tomorrow night should be the biggest in a very long time. Now, per Dave Meltzer over on the NXT side, WWE officials are said to be very high on LA Knight, with plans to call him up to the main roster sometime in the spring after WrestleMania. To that, I say, long overdue. What took you so long? He should have been called up when they did the draft back in October. He should have been put on SmackDown then. But if it's finally going to happen, again, long overdue. Guy's not getting any younger. He's the same age as Damian Priest. Now is the time to strike while the iron is hot. This guy can add a lot, I think, to either one of those two shows. Add Brian Kendrick to the list of names of Performance Center coaches that recently asked for their release. First Scotty Too Hottie, and now Kendrick, who we last saw on TV a few weeks ago. He was being thrown down a flight of stairs by Harlan, and they were supposed to have a confrontation on TV the following week. Kendrick was a no-show. That was around the time that a few people missed the show due to a COVID outbreak. So the match never happened, or the confrontation never happened. Kendrick recently asked for his release. As of this moment, it has not been granted. I wonder if those same people using the Free Ali hashtag will do the same for poor Brian Kendrick. On NXT this week, they had Ali J as their musical guest to sing one of the new NXT songs. Olivia Johnson is her name. I had never heard of this woman before. I had never heard of Ollie J, and when she stepped out of that SUV with Carmelo Hayes, Jesus Christ, I mean, how this woman did not tip over and fall on her face, I'll never know. Shame about her singing, though. It wasn't very good. Poor Poppy lost her gig the minute they booted Triple H out of there. Poppy lost her spot. MSK beat Jacket Time to advance to the next round of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. I thought it was a fun opener. Not their smoothest work, but still fun. With both teams at the end of the match paying respect to each other and embracing. MSK will now meet the bracket-busting team of Idris Enofey and Malik Blade in the next round. We also have the grizzled young veterans beating Andre Chase and his student, Bodie Hayward, who is on a scholarship from Chase University, who's out there looking like the lost member of the Gun Club in AEW. Still very green, but this guy is a bundle of energy. And he was over. His first real match on TV and the crowd was into him. He did this spot where he starts running really fast, running in place, and then does a drop-down splash onto his opponent. He did three straight times. I think he should add a little jump on that last one before he hits the final splash. But the running in place bit reminded me of Dr. Death, Steve Williams. I figured it must be a football. I mean, obviously it's a football thing. And sure enough, old Bodie played college football, as did Dr. Death. Bodie was a linebacker. So the veterans get the win. They've made it all the way to the finals each of the last 2 years in this tournament before losing. They won't even make it that far this time. If you look at the brackets, it is set up perfectly for the final that I predicted a few weeks ago. It should be MSK against the Creed Brothers in the finals. All roads seem to be leading in that direction. By the way, I find it weird how we now have blue ring ropes on NXT. I don't know how many people even bothered to care to notice this, but we have blue ring ropes on NXT, but we have silver ropes on SmackDown. I would love to know the thought that went into that decision. I really like the Santos Escobar promo where he talked about also being from a famous wrestling family, much like Bron Breakker, the NXT champion, and how it makes him sick to see how fast Breakker has gotten opportunities handed to him when they should have gone to Escobar. And Breakker came out to confront him. He accepted Escobar's challenge to a match. Escobar said they would do it on his time. It's a simple story, but it's an effective one. You know, someone like Escobar, I think, should be upset that Braun passed him by, and they do both share a wrestling background. Escobar is also a great talent, I think, for Braun to work with. Solo Sikoa might want to work with a different makeup artist in the future after the fake burn scars that they put on his face from when Boa threw a fireball in his face started falling off. During his Falls Count Anywhere match with Boa. Boa beat the scars right off that man's face. Was it really necessary to put those on him? You could have just as easily put a gauze pad on the guy's face, and it wouldn't have looked like Jillian Hall's fucking mole before the boogeyman ate it off her face. I enjoyed this, though. I mean, it's the best match that Boa has had since coming to NXT, and Solo Sikoa is the real deal. You know, the guy's an Uso. That's why they chant Oos at him during his matches. He's from that family, so the guy's got wrestling in his blood. They brawled into the backstage area for a bit, then they came back out to the arena before the big climactic finish, with Sikoa hitting an Uso splash off the top rope down onto Boa through a table that was set up on the floor. He got some good distance on that. It looked great. And the fans were into it. And thankfully for him, his face is now magically healed. They aired an Imperium vignette where Walter explained his name change by claiming that he was called Walter by his parents as a tribute to his grandfather, who taught him the great sport of pro wrestling. And now it is time to establish his own identity as Gunther. This is still one of the dumbest name changes this company has ever done. Not even the name itself, it's just the fact that he worked for them for 3 years, and then they decided to change the man's name. So I guess he no longer wants to honor the family anymore. Sorry, Grandpa. Old Grandpa Walter needs to step aside. We learned that Odyssey Jones underwent successful surgery for a ruptured patellar tendon. Vic Joseph said the injury will keep him out until the fall. He injured the knee in a match that was taped for 205 Live 2 weeks ago. It never aired. They ended up shooting this angle on NXT backstage last week that basically credited Harland and Joe Gacy. They didn't show it on camera, but they basically implied that they were responsible for injuring him off camera. So if they're still employed by the time Odyssey Jones comes back, then he's got a storyline feud they can plug him into. You never know with this company these days. Who's still going to be employed? Nine months is a long time. A lot can happen in 9 months. I'm still not sold on this daddy's rich girl gimmick for Tiffany Stratton. She suffered her first singles loss to Io Shirai. Cameron Grimes is going to NXT Vengeance Day next month to challenge Carmelo Hayes for the North American Championship. After his victory over Tony D'Angelo, D'Angelo was outside the ring with his hand leaning on the announce desk when Pete Dunne showed up and whacked him in the ring, whacked him in the hand, not the ring, with a cricket bat. When Tony D climbed back inside, Grimes caught him with the cave-in for the win. You know, D'Angelo continues to look good in these big matches. You know, he more than holds his own in there. I know he's got an amateur background, so I thought he looked good. I mean, he doesn't lose anything from the defeat. You know, the match to do is Cameron Grimes against Carmelo Hayes. At the end of the show, as Bron Breakker was leaving the PC, he was being interviewed by one of their very nosy, annoying reporters. Legado del Fantasma pulled up in their SUV. Thought they were about to kidnap this guy. Mendoza and Wild went to go attack him when Tommaso Ciampa showed up, side by side with Bron Breakker, and Legado thought better of it and they sped off. So Ciampa will be Breakker's partner in a 3-on-2 handicap match this Tuesday. Ciampa and Pete Dunne both have had several dark matches. They've had a few main event, not main event matches, but WWE main event matches taped in recent weeks. So it seems likely that one or both of them are going to be called up to Raw or SmackDown soon, but they're not done with them yet. They're not done with them just yet in NXT. If I had to venture a guess about who is the more likely call-up candidate, I would say Pete Dunne. But it would be surprising that they keep having these matches and not one of them gets called up. So those are the highlights of the show that stood out to me. You know, a couple of good matches, but a pretty average episode this week. I expect them to make it official this week that it's going to be Breakker defending the NXT Championship against Escobar at Vengeance Day on the 15th. And after that, you know, I think all roads, as I look ahead here, I think all roads lead to Breakker defending the NXT Championship against Walter, probably WrestleMania weekend. You know, PW Insider reported that the current plan, which is very much preliminary, it could change, is for WWE to hold an NXT Stand and Deliver show the same day as night one of WrestleMania as a matinee starting at noon Eastern. And there is no word yet on what venue in Dallas they would use for the event. This would be the first 2.0 event outside of the Performance Center if they move forward with this. I hate it because, not that they're going to be in a different building, but I hate it because that's 7 hours of rest, at least 7 hours of wrestling that day to watch. And I got a lot of prep to do on a typical pay-per-view day. You know, let alone fucking WrestleMania, for God's sakes. I would much rather they just do it that Thursday or Friday. Just separate it out. Why do it on the same day? But I think the match is Breakker defending against Walter. And then the question becomes, do they feed Walter to Breakker as a big name for him to overcome? Or, more likely, I think, does Walter take the title and start a new reign as the NXT champion? He had 870 days. As the NXT UK champion, he can start anew with the NXT title. I think it all boils down to who does WWE want to call up to Raw or SmackDown first? Imperium or Bron Breakker? That's the question. And how soon? Because that's going to dictate who goes over in that match. If their plan is to build around Walter as the champion, then that's a good place for his reign to begin. Would be WrestleMania weekend. Breaker is someone I think they're going to want on the main roster sooner rather than later. You know, in my predictions at the beginning of the year, I said that by the draft in October, this guy's going to get called up. I mean, that would be the absolute latest that I see him getting called up. Unless he gets sidelined with an injury or something, I think they're going to want him up. If it's me, Walter and Imperium belong on Raw or SmackDown. As uneasy as I am about how they might be booked, you know, in a perfect world, it's ridiculous for those guys. All three of them, not just Walter, it's ridiculous for all three of them at this point not to be on Raw or SmackDown very soon. Now, I watched the latest Broken Skull Sessions. Got a couple of tweets about this. Steve Austin had Becky Lynch on as his latest guest. I thought it was very good. I thought it was a very good show. Becky is she's a fascinating person to listen to. Maybe it's the accent. I don't know. But it runs just shy of 90 minutes. She touches on the head injury that she sustained in 2006 that led to her taking 7 years off from wrestling before she ended up in NXT. She had left Ireland to wrestle all over the place. She went to go live in Vancouver. So she was wrestling in Canada. She traveled to Japan, to Germany. You know, this woman just wanted to travel the world and wrestle. She was 19 years old at the time. She was in Germany. And what happened is she gave somebody a suplex. And the girl landed on Becky's head on the way down. She said the girl wasn't too good. She wasn't very good, but she blamed herself for complicating things. She had just got done with a tour of Japan, and so she wanted to get her shit in. She wanted to try all these moves that she learned over there, and she ended up giving herself a bad concussion. And it was a little more serious than that, so let me fill in the gaps here that she didn't talk about on the show. She was wrestling this girl named Kisu. Is this woman's name. I have no idea if Kisu is still wrestling or not. But she was wrestling her for German Stampede Wrestling. This was in 2006. And what she did is she delivered a German suplex, right? A German suplex in Germany. Who knew? Who knew? I guess it makes sense. She gives her a German suplex, and you can see Kisu landed on Becky's face. Becky comes up. She's grabbing her head. But she kept wrestling like nothing was wrong. I mean, they wrestled for a few more minutes and Becky looked fine. I mean, the move itself didn't look particularly devastating or anything like that. And this other girl, I mean, she wasn't that big. So it's not like this 500-pound woman landed on her head or anything like that. But she ended up in and out of the hospital for weeks after that because she started getting these really intense headaches. She had a loud buzzing in her ear that wouldn't go away. The vision in her left eye was completely blurred. Her doctor told her that she may have damaged her 8th cranial nerve. And that alone is not what caused her to leave wrestling for 7 years. I mean, it was a bad injury. It wasn't that bad. There were other things involved in why she stepped away. She said in the interview with Austin that she used the concussion as an excuse to get out of wrestling because she just thought she was a failure. And she was depressed, and she just didn't think that she was good enough, and she wasn't doing well. And she talked about going into all of these other, you know, jobs. She became a flight attendant. She was a personal trainer. She was an English teacher. She took college courses in acting. All of these things that she started doing to try to fill the void that was left by wrestling. And it was a conversation with Finn Balor. It was a conversation with Fergal, as she called him, that really turned her around on things. Now, Devitt, you know, Balor, is the person who trained her. He trained her. Now, he was still a young guy himself, but he knew, you know, he knew enough about the basics where he had a school and he was training people, and Becky Lynch is one of the people that he helped train. So she went back to him and said, well, I'm kind of thinking about dipping my toe back into things and maybe getting back into it. And she said, you know, Balor's response was very simple. He told her, go back, because I don't want to be sitting here with you 10 years from now having this same conversation. She said, this year, 2022, marks 10 years since they had that conversation. And look where she is now. She headlined a WrestleMania before he did. She talked about the triple threat match at WrestleMania 32. She said she wasn't originally supposed to even be part of that match. It was supposed to be Charlotte Flair one-on-one against Sasha Banks. But there were some injuries at the time. She was filling in on TV doing stuff that they ended up really liking. And so they worked her into the match. She said it was the fans chanting her name when they debuted the SmackDown Women's Championship. I remember they did a segment, I think, with all the women on that roster in the ring, and they were chanting her name. That's what got them to, you know, realize she's the one. And they put the championship on her, made her the first SmackDown Women's Champion when she beat Carmella for the belt. SummerSlam 2018. I was glad to hear her, you know, talk about this, and they showed what happened there. That was the triple threat. It was Charlotte, it was Becky, it was Carmella for the championship. And I remember that vividly. I remember talking about that for months on the podcast. Not too many people were talking about the momentum that Becky Lynch was building. And I remember pointing out on the podcast week after week when she finally started winning matches, because they were doing nothing with her. She was barely even being on TV featured. And then she started winning matches. Week after week, she was racking up wins in a very low-key way. The announcers weren't really drawing too much attention to it, but I was pointing it out every week on the podcast. I said, look, you know, they're doing something with her. They're building to something with Becky Lynch because she keeps winning. And the fans were really behind her, and they really wanted to see her win the championship. Charlotte had been out, I think, for a month or a month and a half. I think she might have popped a boob or something. I don't remember what the injury was, but she was out for a little while. And when she got that repaired, she returned to television. And almost instantly, she might have won, I think, one match on TV. And all of a sudden, they inserted her into the championship picture heading into SummerSlam. Even though she had not even been on television, she wasn't doing anything. She returns, and then boom, Charlotte Flair is in the title picture. Even though they had this great story that had been building with Becky and the people wanting to see her win. So it turned into a triple threat. And not the last time that Charlotte would be shoehorned into a Becky Lynch match. Let me just mention that. But she said there were people in the office who actually thought that she would be booed for what she did to Charlotte when that match was over, when she attacked her, which is very scary, because it should have been obvious to anybody following that story for her that summer that Charlotte winning was going to cause a massive backlash against Charlotte. And it's exactly what happened. They rooted for Becky and they booed Charlotte. They were not happy about that finish. And it wasn't just in that one city. How they didn't see that is bizarre to me. I mean, this is what they do for a living, right? Isn't this what they do? The creative forces over in WWE, right? They tell stories. How is it that I knew what the reaction was going to be and Becky knew what the reaction was going to be, but they didn't know what the reaction was going to be? But that was a great moment. You know, when that actually, the match itself, I remember being pretty good. But that moment when she smacked Charlotte after she hugged her, she then hauled off and smacked her in the face, and the place just exploded and they went nuts and they did yes chants. They were so happy. And that was the beginning of the man. That was the beginning of what was supposed to be a heel turn for Becky Lynch. Boy, they're always trying to turn this woman heel. But that was the beginning of the supposed heel turn, and they tried, and it didn't work because the people didn't want to boo her. They showed Nia Jax potatoing her on Raw that November. Austin was very happy that Becky did not wipe all the blood off of her face, or else we would have been deprived of that iconic image of her posing in the crowd all bloody with her arms outstretched. I mean, that was a classic moment on Raw. But there are some other interesting things here. You know, they talked about the difference in chasing and staying on top. And Becky said that was when the pressure really started to get to her. After she won at WrestleMania against Ronda and Charlotte, and now she's Becky two belts and she's on top and she's number one. You know, she went from main events with Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair to trying to make Lacey Evans. And Austin made a great point. He goes, that should not have been your job. And she said, well, no, it shouldn't be my job, but it was. So I had to do the best I could with it because Lacey wasn't ready for that spot. And she was somebody that people didn't know. And she's being thrust into this position challenging for the title. And Becky said, well, basically she had to just make the most of it. But they talked about WrestleMania 36. And I've heard her say this before, that she pitched to lose her Raw Women's title at WrestleMania that year. She pitched it. She didn't say in the interview here what the idea was that she pitched, but she said before that she pitched to lose to Shayna Baszler, who was her opponent, and the idea was rejected. Now, this would have been before she even knew that she was pregnant, or I guess she might have been pregnant at that point and just didn't know it, but this was before any of that, right before. And she was like, well, I feel like I should lose to this woman. It would help Shayna a lot more. And for the company, it would have worked out well, because little did they know that they were about to lose this woman for, you know, at least 9 months. But the idea got rejected. And that led to the segment on Raw with her forfeiting the title over to Asuka. And she said, look, honestly, the fact that I had to disappear for all those months, what made it a little bit easier was the fact that it just so happened to coincide with COVID. And she didn't have to work in front of no crowd. And you could tell when Austin talks about this, I mean, he would have been fucking miserable. Back in the day, if there was a fucking pandemic that hit and they had to work in front of no fans, Austin would have been miserable. Can you imagine Austin and those guys back then, but especially him, as hot as he was when he would walk out in front of those crowds, if a pandemic had hit back then and they were still doing shows in front of empty chairs, and Austin is storming down to the ring with his BMF wall, like, how awful would that have been? That would have been terrible. So I didn't envy any of those people having to do that. Some of them, you know, they pulled it off. You know, some of them worked well on those pandemic shows. But you could tell Austin, they brought him in that first week, actually. It was supposed to be 316 day. They were going to do a whole 316 day thing with Steve Austin. And instead, he comes walking out. That there it is right there. You want to know what it would have been like? Go back and watch that show. It was fucking awful. Him coming to the ring, they had, you know, him reciting some awful material. There wasn't anybody there to laugh or react to it or anything. And he has said that it was awful. He hated it. He hated that segment. He thought it came off so bad. And it did. And Becky cracked a joke. You know, she said, you know, the goal was always to have a family. She said, you know, 316 day, because her having a kid, she wasn't expecting it to happen that fast. You know, Seth has got some swimmers in there. She said, I don't know. You know, we had 316 day. Remember, she was in the ring drinking with Austin? She goes, it was 316 day and I got drunk and 9 months later I had a baby. It's funny how that works. And she does talk about coming back at SummerSlam and the stuff with Bianca, the 26 second match. She only found out that day. She confirmed that she only found out that day about the plan to bring her back. And it was their choice. It was not hers. It was their idea for her to come back as a heel. There were conflicting reports early on about, oh, Becky wanted to turn heel. No, it was the company that wanted her to turn heel. But the most interesting thing I think that people will take away from this, they do address the infamous segment on SmackDown a few months ago, the title swap with Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. They replayed the entire thing while they sat there and watched it. Charlotte is in the ring with Becky, Sonya Deville is between them. This was their great idea because post-draft, right, they're going to swap the belts like it's fucking candy. It was a terrible idea to begin with. These segments are so stupid when they do this. They did this with the tag titles, with the New Day a few years ago. It's stupid. It's very dumb. But they're in the ring. Charlotte is holding the belt away from Becky. When Becky goes to reach for it, Charlotte kind of holds it away from her. And, you know, it falls on the floor, and then Becky takes her title and throws it at Charlotte. And Becky said, look, this should have been an easy, straightforward thing. The plan was, I'm going to grab the title out of her hand, and for a few seconds, I'm going to be Becky two belts. I'm going to have both belts, and then I'm going to take my title, and I'm going to throw it at Charlotte. And Sonya would make her pick the belt up. I don't know if Sonya would make her pick the belt up or Charlotte would make Sonya pick it up. I think it's whichever way it was. But Charlotte would then challenge Becky to a fight. You know, like, bitch, you want to go? And then Becky would back away and say, you know what? Not tonight. So the idea is that everybody would have their moment. Becky would have her moment. Charlotte would have her moment. And Becky said she knew. She knew when they were in the back before they even went out there. She didn't say how she knew or what made her think this, but she said she knew that Charlotte was not going to, you know, she was going to go into business for herself. She knew that Charlotte was going to do what she ended up doing before they even went out there. And she tried to tell people but she was powerless to do anything about it. And then they went out there, and it played out exactly the way that she thought it would. So I don't know if they had some kind of a disagreement in the back before the show, and Charlotte flat out told her, no, here's how we're doing it, and that's how she knew, or what. It's very clear that these two are not friends anymore. This is not a work. They're not working the fans. It didn't feel like one then, and it definitely doesn't feel like one now. I don't even see what purpose it would serve. Something happened between these two, or they just grew apart, whatever it was. These two are nowhere near as close as they used to be. And you could just hear it in her voice as she talked about this. And when the segment was over, she admitted, she said, I lost my head. I got hot. Words were said. Words were exchanged. Things got heated in the back when it was over. It was what it was. Remember the whole story that, you know, it was all over at PW Insider and all the websites. You know, they had security escort Charlotte out of the building. That's when Andrade went on Twitter and tweeted something out about WWE. I think he said, fuck WWE or something. It's like, huh, that came out of nowhere. That was kind of strange. So anyway, she gets into a whole discussion about that. And they worked together. They did business together at Survivor Series and had an excellent match. And she says she still has a close bond with Bayley and Sasha. Not so much anymore with Charlotte. They don't really like each other. And Austin put all four of them over as future Hall of Famers, which is pretty obvious. One day they will all go into the Hall of Fame. A lot of people on the roster these days will end up in the Hall of Fame eventually. But those four women will deservedly be inducted one day when it's their time. So again, it was a 90-minute interview. They got into a lot of other stuff. It was very interesting. I enjoyed it, and I think you will too. Becky is an interesting person to listen to. I only got one question here I want to use. I didn't have time to put a whole mailbag together. I didn't expect that show to end last night as late as it did, so I'm half asleep here. Cut me some slack. Let's go to Chris, though. Got an email from Chris in Staffordshire, England. Hope I said that the right way. Have you seen the empty arena match from this week's NWA USA between George South and Wrecking Ball Ligursky? It's only January, but I cannot see anything topping this in 2022. At least I hope I don't. So I had not seen this. And NWA USA is a relatively new show. I think they're only 3 or 4 episodes into it. So I had to see what Chris was talking about. So I watched it. The NWA, for those who don't know, is back on YouTube with its shows. They took it off and put it behind a paywall for a while, but they are back on YouTube now. Power and the new show. Because they still have NWA Power. But the new show is called NWA USA. Started a few weeks ago. They're half-hour episodes built around this ongoing junior heavyweight title tournament that they're doing. Although it's not just junior heavyweight matches on the show. You know, and half an hour is an easy watch, so I got through it pretty quick. I saw that Natalia Markova was wrestling on this episode, and I took an interest because she is our current House of Glory women's champion. She's very good. So I watched this, and I saw Kerry Morton, the son of Ricky Morton, had a match. He's got a future ahead of him. And then I watched the main event, which was an empty arena, unsanctioned match between Wrecking Ball Ligursky, who is a big man. It's about 375 pounds. Taking on George South. 60-year-old George South, who does not look to be in terrible shape or anything for a man of his age. George South has been around for ages. I mean, this guy, he wrestled for Crockett, he wrestled for Vince, he wrestled for Cornette and Smoky Mountain. He's been around a long time. I watched it, and yes, it was very boring. It was not good. And it was made even worse by Austin Idol on commentary. Austin Idol is insufferable on the microphone. He just shouts. He talks over everybody. Look, even if you don't like Velvet Sky's commentary, he stampedes over her and doesn't even let the woman get a word in edgewise. He is awful. But I will say, I am glad that they're back in front of fans again, back in studio in front of actual human beings. Those empty arena shows were just dreadful to watch. It wasn't their fault. I'm not blaming them, but it was terrible television. I disagree, though. It would only be the second worst match that I have seen so far after Evil's match at Wrestle Kingdom. At least this didn't go 12 minutes like that match did. That match sucked. So this would only be number two on the list of worst matches of the year. Email me your questions, thesolomonster@gmail.com. That is the place to send those on in. Please include your name and where you are from when you do so. You can follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. The poll for the Royal Rumble is still up, and it is not pretty. It does not look good. I haven't checked it in the last few hours, but it was thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, and thumbs down. And last I checked, the Rumble had a solid 11% thumbs up, which would be one of the worst scores I think the Royal Rumble has ever gotten in all the years I've done these polls. I don't know if it would be as bad as 2014 or 15. I'd have to go back and see how those polls did, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. You can still vote, though, @Solomonster on Twitter. Follow me on there. Obviously, on YouTube, you type in Solomonster Sounds Off, you'll find the official channel. And a ton of content. I was streaming all week long. There's members-only content that went up. Of course, the 1992 Royal Rumble watch-along for members is still up if you are a channel member. But we have, you know, the call-in show and more stuff going up soon. Everybody who joined, by the way, in the last few days and became a channel member, we are getting very close to 300 members. That's kind of like the next big milestone I have set for myself. And we're getting very close to 300, you know, paying members on the channel. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. So if you want to check out what content is available, you know, you can click the join button. It won't automatically join you or anything. It'll show you what you get, the perks and the badges and the emojis and all that kind of stuff. And you can join either the Superstar tier, the Legends tier. You have two options there, but a lot of content. A lot of content going up. I'm going to be live on YouTube Wednesday night for the Dynamite review, and we'll do the Ultimate Rumble pool. We'll pick a random winner there. Next Sunday, episode 742 of the Solomonster Sounds Off, 742 episodes. That'll be our first show for the month of February. I think that covers everything. I'm exhausted. As a friend of mine used to say, I am Stone Cold Steve exhausted. So I am going to head out. Please be well. Please stay safe. I know a lot of people got hit by some wild weather this week. We got whacked with a nor'easter here in New York, and I'm not going to be able to move my car for at least a week. And with all the Rumble stuff, I didn't even have time to go out and shovel. It wouldn't have mattered anyway, because every time I would go out there and shovel and try to at least get some of the snow away so I could open my car door, the plow would come right down the block. If you're parked, if you're doing parallel parking out there, every time the plow comes by, forget about it. All the progress you just made is completely undone. So I said, fuck it. I'm just going to leave it. I just hope it doesn't ice over, because it's pretty cold outside. But wherever you are, hopefully you stay safe. And I will see you guys back for more Sound Off next weekend. So until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster Sounds Off.
Beth Phoenix is standing in the aisle. She is making these over the top. She's mean mugging the camera, and she's just standing there. Thank God Kevin Dunn played her music, or else she might still be standing there. Poor woman was like she was frozen, like she was trapped in carbonite or something. I don't know what was going on.
The Solomonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Solomonster Sounds Off.